Listen to WGN Radio's newest podcast, Behind the Badge, Illinois, hosted by David Hochberg. Behind the Badge, Illinois views current events through the eyes of Illinois law enforcement leaders. Tune in. Visit WGNradio.com/behindthebadge.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Hi.
Here's John Williams.
It's me, remember? And the Allstate Skyline Studio back again. I'll explain my absence in just moments. It's good to be here. How are you? We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio until 3. Then I'll go home and take a nap. Thanks to producer Elif Garris and people like John Hansen and Pete McMurray and folks who filled in for me, Justin Kaufman, while I was away. It was about a week ago yesterday or the day before. It was shortly after Memorial Day that I was in this studio interviewing Bob Westrick, one of the partners at Private Vista, a great financial services firm. They manage your wealth, you know. And Mark Baser was one of our guests, too, that day, as I recall. And as I was talking to them in the studio shortly after Memorial Day in our studio, I noticed that in the upper left-hand corner of my eye, it looked like I was looking through a photographic film negative. So I could see, but it was just darker. And I thought, well, maybe it's a floater. There were times I tried to flick away what I thought were some hairs in my eye, and my field of vision was being clouded. But it wasn't that. There was something definite and different. And I also remembered, as I thought about my vision that day, that maybe the day before, and I don't remember if my eyes were open or closed when this happened, but I saw two bolts of lightning. You know how sometimes you see little flashes of light and you get floaters in your field of vision, but this was pretty weird. It was like, zoom, zoom, and then it was gone, and that was the end of it. No pain, no sound, no nothing, no trauma at any time that generated any of those things, but I remember a couple bolts of lightning, and I remember that my field of vision was now in one corner of one eye a little darker. And by the hour, the dark field was encroaching on the light. It was coming left to right by the hour. And I didn't like that. And in fact, as soon as it happened, I saw the lightning. I thought, crap, I just detached my retina. I guessed that was it. My dad had something like this happen to him. That is, he had a detached retina, but he didn't have the exact same symptoms. But I kind of thought if it happened to my dad, it might happen to me. And when that happened, I thought, I'll bet that's what that is. But then, because I didn't want that to be it, I thought the smart play would be to ignore it for a while, and then maybe it'll go away. But it wasn't. And so, as I'm looking at Bob Westrick and Mark Baser, two guests that were in our studio that day, I thought, dang, if these are the last people I ever see out that eye, what a wasted opportunity it will have been. So I called the doctor, and they said, go to the emergency room at Northwestern. So I buzzed on over here after the show to Northwestern. Lucky me, lucky you if you live near there, that one of the world's great medical facilities is so accessible if you're downtown Chicago. I just buzzed right over there. When you walk into the emergency room, they'll say, what's the matter? And then you'll kind of tell them. But you don't. I'm like, no, that's why I'm here. I don't know. You are the doctors. I said, I think I detached my retina. And she said, okay, fill out this form and sit over there. And then I sat for a little while, maybe an hour or so. And, you know, I wasn't in any pain. And I could be wrong. But I also felt that with every passing minute, I'm losing more of my vision. I was. And so I wanted to sort of stand up and say, hey, you know, we need to kind of get on this here. But everybody in the ER feels that way. Nobody's there because they're doing swell. Everybody. In fact, there was one guy who said, I need to kind of cut in line here. And he was being belligerent and they were having none of it. The people who work in emergency rooms in major hospitals and major cities in America are a special and wonderful breed because they not only have medical abilities, they've gone to med school or nursing school, whatever their specialty is, but they're just dealing with people in their worst moments, some of whom are coherent and some of whom are not, some of who have insurance and some of who don't, some who need to be there and some who absolutely do not, and they're trying to sort through all of them. So I'm just kind of taking this all in as my vision's going away.
Oh, my God.
So I just thought, oh, I literally got out my phone and thought, I wonder if I should go somewhere else. But I thought, no, I've waited here an hour, so I'd better not lose my place in line. My luck, I'll be in a cab heading to another place, and they'll call my name. And in fact, in all fairness to them, they handled me really quickly. I'll cut to the chase. 24 hours after I walked in, at that same hospital, I was being operated on to reattach the retina. So that's them getting the job done. That is amazingly efficient operation. I finally saw an ER doc who then got me to another doctor who had a little bit more of a specialty with eyes. They did a sonogram of the eye, and they go, wow, that's not supposed to be there. Then they called another eye doctor who lives downtown and ran over and saw me. And then he said, that looks pretty bad. So then they called another eye doctor. So I'm kind of moving up the chain there. And finally, around 7 o'clock that evening, I walked in around 3:30. They said, we're going to operate on you tomorrow. Don't do anything. So I went home and got up the next morning, opened my eyes, was pleased to see that I could still see out that eye and that the encroachment had increased, but it wasn't terrible. I could still see out of maybe 70% of that eye. And then they wheeled me on in. They put me out and then woke me up what felt like a moment later. And if I just may say something about anesthesia, wow, is that a good thing? Wow. I had never been put out before. I was under the impression that when you went under or when you came to, you would be experiencing a little high. You'd be drunk. It would be when people say the anesthesia is kind of nice, I thought it was because they were a little heady. But it wasn't that. It was just such a wonderful, deep, profound sleep. In fact, as I was coming to, I remember them saying, John, and now I'm coming back to consciousness. And I thought, no, I want to go back there. I want to go back to that sleepy place. Because that sleepy place was really nice.
But you don't remember anything. You don't have any dreams, right?
No. I mean, it was just a void. It was a deep... In fact, I thought, actually, here's what they should do. They should make that available to the general public. You should just be able to swing on by, maybe have home kits. Just come out and... Whew. You know, what's that sleep aid that people take? Not Tylenol.
Ambien.
Ambien. I never take that, and I think that makes people do stupid stuff.
Yeah.
But this was just fantastic. So anyway, thanks to all the doctors that did all of that. Here's a funny thing, though. When you come to, at least this has been my experience, and this may be yours, too, if you ever have a detached retina. So I'm an expert only by a week and through my own personal experience, but this is what they told me. The retina came detached. You didn't do anything wrong. Sometimes it's a trauma. You get hit in the head with a baseball and it detaches. Sometimes it just happens. And to me, it just happened. It just peeled off inside there. So what are we going to do? We got to reattach it. There's two ways they can do that. One is to put a little band around your eyeball that will squish down like a tennis ball the eyeball and push that eye wall literally back into the retina, which is kind of flapped up. And now the two of them are reunited by this band just pushing down on your eyeball a little bit. And that's what they did to me. Another option is that rather than push the eye wall back onto the retina, they'll put a little gas ball, a little gas bubble, a little gas in your eyeball. And that gas will float up, will push out, and will push the retina back to the eye wall. So either you bring the eye wall down or you push the retina out. That all sounds good to me. Give me one of those, right? Maybe you'll have a combination of the two. I think that would have been an option. But mostly they said it'll be one or the other. We don't know how we're going to do it until we get in there, which are words you never want to hear somebody really describe about your eyeball when we get in there. But they got in there. And when you wake up, they tell you what happened. And they said, when I woke up, we did not do the gas treatment. We just put the band around your eye and you should be okay. Thank you very much. If they do the gas treatment, they put a little chamber of gas in your eyeball, and it, I guess, is lighter than air. It'll float up, right, and then push the retina back onto the eye wall, and that'll heal, and you'll have your vision again. But the problem is that if you have that procedure, you have to look down so that the gas ball floats up and pushes the retina back to the eye wall.
See, and that's what I heard, John, that you would, because I was worried you were watching TV, looking down and all of this stuff.
You have to have your head down 22 hours a day for 2 weeks. I can't do that. Can you imagine?
No.
That's what Mary said, too. She said, oh, I think that you can't come to work. You have to have your head down. But I don't know if I'd be laying down. I would have to go. I don't know how I would accomplish that. It would be unbearable.
Someone said that they knew someone, and they actually watched TV in a mirror.
Right. I've heard that, too. Yeah, so you've got a mirror, and you're looking at it in an angle because you're laying face down. You got to keep that bubble floating up and pushing the retina back up. And you have to be in that position 22 hours a day for 1 to 2 weeks. My back hurts just thinking about that. And I don't know until I come out of Neverland and they say, you did good, thank you. And then you say, which one did I have? And then you have that moment of truth. I could tell by the expression on Brenda's face, my wife was there in the recovery room, that we weren't going to have to go through that. Because as difficult as that would have been for me, I don't think that would have been a can of corn for Brenda either. And then we drove home. She drove. And that's where I've been for the last week, is just recuperating. But the injury is pain-free and the surgery was pain-free. And you know how they talk about the complex patients have about their doctors sometimes after the doctor makes you well or whole again. I'm so there. I looked at this little Dr. Fauci who fixed my eye, who I never knew and only have spoken to for maybe 10 minutes in my life, but has changed or restored my life. And I want to buy her some flowers. I want to take her out for a nice steak dinner. You know, I want to get her whatever it is that she wants. You know, she shook my hand and said, okay, well, good luck. We'll see you in a couple of weeks. And I just grasped her hand a little tighter. And I thought, this isn't a business transaction. I'm not a customer here. You aren't maybe fully aware of how appreciative I am for what you've done for me. But she sort of nodded her head like she's been to this movie before. And she said, yes, you're welcome. It's okay. Bye now. And off she went. That day at Northwestern, one of the nurses that was tending to me before the procedure, and she was entering information and asking me questions. And at one point, she got a little distracted, and she said, I'm sorry, but we've done 40 procedures today. Wow. I just can't say enough good things about the people over at Northwestern, from the very individuals I met in the emergency room all the way through the doctor that did the surgery to the kind of care I've been getting since. You know, I know that med school is difficult and expensive, and we get angry at the medical industrial complex in this country, and maybe we haven't figured out how to manage it. But at the end of the day, if you can see a couple of bolts of lightning in your field of vision, and 24 hours later, somebody's reattached your retina, we're doing something right. And thank God for those people that are smart enough and bold enough to do that sort of thing. Because I saw David Hochberg in the hall today, and he kind of looked at me with his knees slightly buckled, as though looking at me for the first time after the surgery was going to be alarming enough that he'd need to spring away, which I totally get. I mean, I've been wanting to wear sunglasses because when people first encounter my face, I see them look at me, look at them, they look at me, and they're like, their eyes kind of go to my eye to like, ooh, what's this going to be? I look normal. I look fine. But it's kind of upsetting to even hear that that sort of thing could happen and that they have to go in and fix it that way. So Hochberg sees me, and he's kind of got a fight or flight stance, like, okay, what am I going to do? Can I handle this? I said, look, David, I'm fine. I'm going to be okay. And he says, oh, okay. And he and I concluded that if the world were left up to people like me and Hochberg to fix people's eyes, we would all be blind today. So thanks to the good doctors and staff over at Northwestern for doing what they did. Other texts include, why did they wait 24 hours? If you were losing your vision by the hour, you could have gone blind. Once it's dark, that's it. My neighbor went blind in one eye. I think they literally have 50 people sitting in a waiting room, and I was frustrated that it took so long at first, but I, you know, hindsight's 20/20. If you'll pardon the pun, I think they handled me efficiently and judiciously and fairly. I have no complaints about that. Hi, John. Thank you for your kind words about RNs. Glad you're feeling better. John, I'll bet you spent several days face down while you were healing. Yeah, I haven't had to do that. I guess I'm kind of lucky. Hey, Mary, you're on WGN Radio. How are you?
I'm good.
What's up?
Yeah. I was going to tell you, I had a hole in my macular, and they did not put you all the way under, so you could hear them talking somewhat. But also, I had to be for a week with your face down, because that air bubble has to float up to the top like it does in a pop bottle.
Right.
And kind of make a Band-Aid. And I was curious, but you said it. You were not put under. I mean, you were put under. So, you know, it's amazing what they can do with the eye and the operation. And I hate to think of, with yours, a band around your eyeball, and it squeezes the thing into that. Is that what you said?
There's probably an eye doctor somewhere going, no, that's not it. But yeah, that's that's pretty much it. Yeah, something like that.
Okay, is your band still on your eyeball?
Yeah.
Oh, and do they take it off?
No.
Oh, okay. Good. Well, I'm glad you're doing well.
Yeah, and likewise. Just think about this. I talk to Teddy Roosevelt on the radio sometimes and Thomas Jefferson. Teddy Roosevelt was boxing. And he told one of the Navy midshipmen who he was sparring with, and this junior naval officer was very tentative about hitting the president of the United States. But Roosevelt said, no, I want to box. This is exercise. Give me your best shot. And the guy hauled off, hit him in the face, detached his retina, and Roosevelt didn't see out of that eye anymore. And at that time, that was it. If your retina's detached, well, I guess you're not going to be a sharp shooter, Bucky. You just lost your eyesight. And now something like this happens to you or to me, and 24 hours later, in theory, we can be fixed. Isn't it amazing?
Wow. It is quite amazing. That's great. Good. I mean, I'm happy you're doing well.
Nice of you to call. Thanks for listening.
You bet.
Have a good day. Yeah. Ann, jump in there. Your husband had this. He had to do that lay down thing, huh?
Yeah, it happened in 2009, and I thought we were being punked when they were explaining that you had to be face down.
This is for a joke.
Right, it seems so surreal. But I'm sorry this happened to you, but I'm glad that you're talking about it, because a lot of people don't understand the symptoms and what's happening, and my husband had to have the gas bubble put in his eye and face down for 2 weeks. And then a few days later, it happened again in a different spot of his eye, a different part of his retina.
Wow.
And then he had to have the scleral buckle put on.
That's what I had,
Yeah, he had to have that put on. And then he had to be face down again because they had gas in his eye as well.
Oh, wow. Yeah, they said I might have that, but I got lucky, I guess.
Yes, you did get lucky. I had to buy straws because he couldn't tilt his head back to take a drink.
Right.
You know, everything. You had to rent a special chair for him to sit in. And yes, they do have a prism mirror that you can use to watch TV. It's quite an experience. And his happened in 2009. So I'm glad that you're doing okay, but that's not anything you ever want to wish on someone. He spent nearly the entire month of October that year face down.
Thank you for the call. I'm glad you guys are doing well, Ann. I appreciate your call.
Sure. Thanks.
Yeah, have a good day. So attend to that. If suddenly something goes bink, don't think, it's going to get better. You get yourself to the ER. It's 1:30. We'll get ourselves to the WGN Radio Newsroom with Steve Bertrand next.
Extension 720.
Tonight, it's one of the late, great Milt Rosenberg's favorite times of the year. It's Lit Fest. This weekend, Chicago shows its literary chops as Printers Row is overwhelmed with authors of all kind. We talked to a few of them tonight on Extension 720 on 720 WGN.
So after lunch, I need to stop at First American Bank.
Sure.
You know, they're now the largest privately held bank in Illinois.
Really?
Yeah. Assets of $4.9 billion, 53 branches nationwide.
I bank at First American.
And they're run by the owners who make business decisions right there.
I told you about First American.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I tell everyone about First American. They have the best loan deals in town, great home equity loans, low interest mortgages, checking accounts for every lifestyle, incredible personal service.
Yeah?
I told my brother-in-law to switch his business to First American because they have all the commercial lending capabilities, and he did.
Okay.
I single-handedly propelled First American to become the largest privately held bank in Illinois.
You don't think it's because people know First American does more for their money?
Who told you that?
You're right, you did.
Thank you.
Congratulations.
You gonna buy me lunch?
First American does more for your money. Visit firstambank.com. Call us at 847-952-3700. Member FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
John, my mom had that bubble. She had to look down for weeks, so I got her cute minion slippers to look at while she was looking down. John, is that gas going to be taxed by Pritzker? And we're back. And now we're back to doing a radio show.
That's pretty funny. And yes, it is.
60 seconds. Steve will do the news. According to a news investigation by the Chicago Tribune and Kaiser Health News, nursing home sepsis is rampant here in Illinois. Nursing home sepsis is a life-threatening bloodstream infection. It often comes as a result of an infected bed sore. That's a common sign of nursing home abuse. This investigation found that 6,000 Illinois nursing home residents are hospitalized each year for sepsis, and sadly, one in five of these patients dies from that. Experts blame the prevalence of sepsis on poor staffing levels at nursing homes. Symptoms include chills, loss of appetite, fever, rapid breathing, irregular heartbeat. If you or a loved one's developed nursing home sepsis or any other symptoms of nursing home abuse, call the GWC Injury Lawyers right now. They've gained a hard-earned reputation for fighting for the maximum amount of compensation for their injured clients. Here's that number, 312, and then dial 9, 312-999-9999, or visit justicestartstoday.com, sponsored by roadamerica.com. This is Steve Bertrand.
The bishop in Springfield says Speaker Madigan and others will be banned from communion after their support of a bill that expands abortion rights in the state. The speaker says after much deliberation, he decided that protecting a woman's right to choose, especially in cases of rape and incest, was worth it. R. Kelly was arraigned on 11 sex abuse charges today. The judge left his bail unchanged. And talks over threatened tariffs on Mexico are resuming at the State Department. Mexican officials met with Vice President Pence at the White House yesterday. Nothing was resolved there. We'll check your money, sports, traffic, and weather next on WGN.
Well, you know, I'm certainly not the only one who says I love this place. Jameson's Char House is the perfect spot to relax in a casual atmosphere that's warm and inviting. My wife and I frequently dine at the Huntley location, where we enjoy hand-cut black Angus steaks, succulent chops, or sometimes fresh fish favorites like the Greek-style Alaskan halibut with rice pilaf and roasted asparagus. Plus, every side dish, warm oven-baked bread, and homemade soups and salad dressings are irresistible. Dine among family, friends, or business associates at any Jameson's Char House near you. I love this place.
Celebrate this Father's Day at Jameson's Char House. Treat Dad to a well-deserved steak dinner grilled to perfection at a Jameson's Char House near you. Full menu and dinner specials are available. Visit jamesons-charhouse.com and make your reservations for Dad's special day at Jameson's Char House.
Chimneys are a common source for leaks in your home, especially after the weather we've had. For more than 50 years, Lindeman Chimney and Fireplace has been Chicagoland's leading chimney and fireplace company. They fix leaky chimneys. Book online today at cleanfireplace.com.
With dental implants from Eon Clinics, you'll start every day with a smile. Smile and stop trying to hide your mouth. Smile and eat your favorite foods again. The world is a better place when you start smiling again. For a free consultation, call 844-365-SMILE or online at eonclinics.com today. That's eonclinics.com. Dental implants from Eon Clinics. Smile for life.
Your money on WGN. The Dow is up 152 points so far today. The NASDAQ up 26 and the S&P 500 up 14. Checking in at the Merck nearby cattle contract unchanged. Hogs up 12 cents. Trends in today's grain trade. Wheat up 21 cents a bushel. Corn up 6 and a quarter cents. And soybeans down 1.25 cents. We'll have the settlement prices coming up an hour from now. WGN Sports, they're in the top of the second at Wrigley. Cubs and Rockies, no score there. The White Sox have the day off. Stanley Cup Final, Game 5 tonight. They're in Boston. The Boston and St. Louis tied at 2 games apiece. Now look at traffic. Here's David Jennings.
Green Line service still down between 35th and 63rd Ashland. That because of a derailment at 47th Street. Shuttle buses in operation. You can, if you choose, use the Red Line as an alternative. Checking on the roads on the inbound Ike. 390 to the post office is 43 minutes. On the Stevenson, you've got an accident on the exit ramp to the inbound Dan Ryan. On the Kennedy, heading outbound downtown to the airport is 42 minutes. Express lanes, no joy. They're 31 right now. Stevenson inbound, 355 to the drive, 42 minutes, 41 minutes heading out the other way. For personalized traffic on demand, get the Traffic Chicago app approved by the mortgage experts of Team Hochberg. Just search TRAFFIX Chicago. I'm David Jennings, WGN Traffic.
The forecast from the WGN Chicago Weather Center, some mostly cloudy skies today, mild. We'll get up to the mid-70s for high, partly cloudy, cool tonight. Could be some fog again, a low of 55 degrees, and then tomorrow, mostly sunny, high 78. Still have a little fog right along the lakefront this afternoon. It's 72 at O'Hare, Midway 71, 74 at Frankfort, and 55 degrees at Chicago's lakefront. I'm Steve Bertrand in the WGN Newsroom. These are the stories that matter on 720 WGN.
Thank you, Steve Bertrand. John Williams here. By the way, Steve, I just spent the last half hour, as you know, detailing why I was away for a week. My right retina had detached, and I had to have it reattached, and I spent the next 5 or 6 days, quote-unquote, recovering and just not doing much. But I didn't have the sort of procedure where you have to be face down, so
right.
I was able to sit up and try not to use my eyes too much.
You were texting me pictures, and I said, quit it.
I know. Brenda said, I'm going to come over there and snap that book shut. Because
you were told not to read for pleasure. Your son told me that.
Yeah. Really? Griff mentioned that.
Well, yeah.
I told him it was okay to discuss, but I didn't know that he ever listens to me when I say anything. So
He told me a lot more than that. Was he not supposed to?
What do you do when they say don't use your eyes much? You know, I was listening to Huck Finn on tape.
Well, that's a good idea, a book on tape.
Yeah.
You know what a lot of people do probably, John?
Mm.
They listen to the radio.
And I didn't much because I...
No, I get that.
My mind would start to go to work, and I'd get up and I'd start reading again. What do you think one of these bad boys costs, by the way?
Oh, man.
So you go to the ER, you see a bunch of specialists there, and you meet... And by the way, the anesthesiologist I met was the most chill dude I've ever met.
You don't have the bill yet, do you?
I do.
Oh.
Well, I went to Blue Cross Blue Shield of Illinois' website, logged in, and then bing, 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 bing. That was the sound of things registering on my website.
I'm going to say $74,000.
I figured there's no way this is going to cost less than $25,000. And if it costs less than $25,000, I got off cheap. I mean, what price would you pay for your vision? You know, really, if they'd said it's $100,000 out of pocket, we would have paid it. And then, I don't know, sold the car, moved to a smaller house,
well,
and live with less.
Yeah, you've got insurance, though. But
so we do. So my out-of-pocket so far, and I think I've looked at the last bill, is less than $1,000.
Yeah.
And overall, they're only charging us $8,000. And I'm thinking
The hospital bill is only $8,000?
The surgery was like $6,000, and the ER was a couple thousand. And maybe the anesthesiologist isn't in there, but I'm thinking if you guys got to charge more for that. I'm the only person in America advocating for higher...
But think of it if you didn't have insurance. You know, that's the point. That's how lucky... You know, I mean, they ripped my sternum out, and I think my out-of-pocket was $1,600.
Imagine that.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of money, but relative to probably the overall cost of chest surgery, I'll bet that was a fraction of it.
I'm just assuming it was $230,000 million.
But... And I know that in the back of my mind... I'm thinking, I know that I'm smart enough to know that I should ask, are you in network?
I know, but you're afraid to, because I was in the same situation, and you don't want to find out that they aren't.
Exactly, because then I think, okay, so what am I going to do? Go to Loyola or DuPage? Those are wonderful hospitals and systems, but that's going to delay my care minimally 24 hours.
Right.
And this is something that is getting worse by the minute. So you just say, I don't care what it costs. I don't care if I have insurance. I have to get this taken care of. And they didn't even ask me many of those questions. You know, I was kind of like, hey, within 24 hours, you will be operated on.
Right.
Boom, let's go.
Can I say one thing that it's not self-serving, but, you know, you were mentioning how, you know, Thomas Jefferson or Teddy Roosevelt, this happened to him. They couldn't be fixed.
Yeah.
And you're watching your vision disappear in front of you.
Yeah.
You know, I'm kind of affiliated with this charity, Eye Care International, where they give eyeglasses and tests to people in Mexico or other parts of Central America or in parts of Central America. And the thing that struck me most about the fact that all of that is the need just for reading glasses for people who don't have them. So not far from us right now, people are losing their ability to read because of a natural aging of their eyes that we could help with just by donating glasses.
I remember when you came back from that trip, and I think you should talk about that more often. I think you should every week bring that up. Where do I give? Is there a website I go to?
Well, Eye Care, it doesn't have to be Eye Care International. It could be anyone. Just there's no reason for glasses to
but
be
don't
sitting.
The Kiwanis accept eyeglasses for
we
people?
We worked with the Rotary Fund.
Maybe it's Rotary, yeah. If there's an organization out there where people can donate their used eyeglasses because they're no longer fashionable or the prescription doesn't work. Yeah, I've got some in a drawer. Steve.
That's the point. It's eyecareinternational.org. It's I with an I as in me, not I-E-Y-E. Eyecareinternational.org.
Letter eyecareinternational.org.
But there are people are just losing their vision as day to day, and it's so easy to fix that situation.
That's what I was thinking. I mean, again, when seems like whenever we talk about medical care in America, we talk about it's too expensive and all of the problems with it. But doggone it, that thing was working for me.
Yeah.
And it was not prohibitively expensive. And I think there's a lot more people like me who get good care at a reasonable price by really talented, hardworking people. And we don't applaud them so much.
I got a text that the Lions Club is big into it too.
Yeah.
So.
Thank you for that.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I think if you have the internet, you'll be able to find somebody that will take your eyeglasses. But by all means, do that. It could be that simple. John, I visited an ER with an appendicitis, and I know how you felt sitting there waiting. While my wait was quite short, it seemed like an eternity. I didn't want my appendix to burst while I waited. And I didn't want to play rank, and I didn't want to say, hey, my injury is worse than somebody else's, so I just sat there. John, I hope your retinal detachment, you had health insurance and affordable, deductible, and cost sharing. That would be another blessing. Well, I think I did. Now, I may find out tomorrow that another bill just rolled in and I owe $72,000 more. But I'm counting myself lucky today. It's D-Day, and it has been D-Week in the news, both in France, in England, in the United States, and around the world as we mark the 75th anniversary of the Allies landing on several beaches in France. And you may recall, last January, February, March, April, so earlier this year in April, we visited with a guy named Marvin Sussman. I'm going to play 3 minutes or so of the beginning of our conversation with Mr. Sussman, who, as I recall, is 95 years old. He's a Chicago guy. And at the age of 95, he came into our studio with his son and talked to us about what his experience was like. He was there D-Day. He was there D-1 hour. And he was spry. I'm feeling like an old man right now. And he was acting like a young man when he came into the studio. I mean, he was very agile and nimble, and his mind was good. And his adult son, who is more like my age, I'm 59, said, Dad really didn't talk much about this. He didn't tell these stories until quite recently. And now his dad gives talks to schools and groups. He's been on YouTube. That is, you can find some of them on YouTube. And so we invited him to come over and talk to us a little bit about his experience. The full conversation we had with him was on the stream that day, right, Aleph? So if this
yes.
sounds not like the audio we normally play back, in part it's probably for that reason. But on my Facebook page, I'm WGN King John on Facebook. We recorded this long conversation we had on the stream that day, and we've posted that, and it's on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. So you'll see a picture of me and Marv, right, Elif? We're both there. And then the full about 25-minute conversation that we had that started about like this.
Yeah, I'm fine, thank you.
If I may, how old are you then?
I'll be 96 in August.
How old were you on D-Day?
Almost 21.
But you were there before the main assault landed, right?
Yeah, 2 hours before. We were landing on an island about 5 kilometers off Utah Beach with the intent to find out if the naval guns were manned or unmanned. Turned out that they were unmanned, but somebody had to verify that. And with the result is that due to mines, explosive mines on the beach, we lost 2 men killed and about 20 wounded.
When you got there, you must have been relieved to find out that the gun was unmanned.
Yeah, and saddened by the death of dear friends.
From that vantage point that day on D-Day then, you must have seen or been able to hear what was happening.
We were watching the parade. It was magnificent thing, all those ships going by us.
And what do you remember about that? Because if I may, did you think this parade is an awesome display of power, but you must have had some sense of how vicious the fighting was?
Well, we couldn't really see much on the beach for 5 kilometers, but we could see the explosions, we could see the airplanes and the naval guns going off, and we could just imagine what was going on the beaches.
I suppose the guys that were in the first waves must have felt like they got the short straw, right? Because, you know, they had to just keep charging and they were the first ones up.
Yeah, they were thinking about where to go, what to do. That's what they were thinking about.
And you must have felt a little fortunate to have had the assignment you did. What are the chances?
Well, we lucked out. It could have been worse.
So you were living in Chicago. Did you get drafted then? Is that what called you up?
No, we were given the choice of either volunteering during 1942, or be drafted in 1943. So rather than be drafted into the infantry in 43, I decided to join the cavalry in 42. Nobody told me that when the cavalry dismounts, it becomes infantry.
So the cavalry sounded like a safer bet, but
no,
maybe not.
I was entirely wrong about that.
What does cavalry mean in 1943?
Cavalry was just then trading in its horses for jeeps and armored cars, and job of cavalry is really information, mostly. Finding out where the enemy is, what he's doing, and doing whatever's necessary to stop him.
Did they tell you all what to expect when the D-Day landing forces were going to arrive in Normandy?
Well, we knew our assignment maybe a day before. Until then, we knew nothing.
Really?
We were totally mystified about what we were going to do.
Well, I'm wondering if you had a sense of what the resistance would be, not on your island per se, but on the beaches.
Well, they tried to tell us about the kind of fortifications we were going to find, but nobody could give us detailed information.
They didn't know what they were going to get into. Marvin Sussman was in our studio earlier this year. That full interview is on my Facebook page. I'm WGN King John, and it's also on the WGN radio station page, but maybe the easiest way to find it if you're on Facebook is just to like me, WGN King John, and you'll find our full conversation with Marv Sussman. I know that after that interview, he was planning on going to France. He did. And Nella thinks he's there now. He was one of the contingent of veterans that went over there for the 75th anniversary. I'm not sure if he's there today or when exactly he'll be back, but we'll bring him back into the studio with his son and maybe do part two of that conversation. He was delightful. And at the end of the interview, I sort of asked him, what advice does he have for America today? You know, do we fully appreciate our freedom? And he said something that really surprised me. And that's at the end of that conversation. I don't think you will have seen it coming if you listen to the full interview. I'm WGN King John on Facebook. Thanks for all of your texts. A lot of you have called and texted to say what a great job producer Elif did in my absence and how swell Steve Bertrand and John Hansen and Justin Kaufman and Pete McMurray and everybody handled the joint.
You know, that's one of the reasons you don't listen if you're a radio guy when you're away, is because if it goes too well, well, then you're not very happy. And I just can't, I can't stand it. I can't stand it if it goes well, and I can't stand it if it goes badly. I can't stand being away.
Well, there's one thing that they all have in common, right?
What's that?
Well, maybe two things, right, Steve? Because me and you.
All the other guest hosts, you mean? What are you talking about?
We're not as good as John.
Thank you. That's not where she's going. I know that.
I'm saying that both Steve and I were here the whole time. So that's the through line that you have.
Right. So there was some consistency there.
You have us.
Absolutely. Yeah. No, I knew it was in good hands, Elif. That's for sure.
You'll always have us, John.
But actually, someone said something about a cupcake.
Yeah. What's that all about?
Tomorrow's my birthday.
Somebody texted and said you need to bring cupcakes to Elif. And maybe I should send cupcakes over to the hospital, too. Along with $80,000. Yeah, happy birthday in advance, Elif. I'll bring the cupcakes tomorrow.
That's okay. You don't have to do that.
I got to bring cupcakes.
Okay.
Yeah, I think you do now. She kind of...
She wants cupcakes.
I am a woman, and, you know, half the time we just say we don't want things that we want.
We really want.
Wow, that's another thing. We can't say that either.
But it does work both ways. This happens every Valentine's Day for a lot of guys whose wives would like a box of chocolates but don't want you to bring them a box of chocolates. And you're damned if you do, and you're damned if you don't. By the way, 262 said, John, my detached and torn retina was over $50,000. Somebody else said, oh, you're going to be getting more doctor's bills.
I was thinking that. I just wonder if they're not all in yet.
John, there will be the ER claim, the ERMD, the person who read your scans, the facility charge for surgery, the surgeon, the anesthesiologist claims. You ain't done yet. Yeah, I'm sure I'm not. John, I had it twice in the same eye. It had stitches, glue, and a nitrogen bubble, and they froze it. I had to lay on my left side for 8 hours, and then on my right side for 8 hours for a month each time. You were very lucky. So far, I am feeling very much so. Hey, John, I'm sorry I missed the whole conversation. How'd you tear your retina? I don't know. I was just sitting there, and it went bink, and I could tell. Bye-bye, retina. Let me tell you about one of my favorite new apps. It's called HomeSnap. HomeSnap has the most up-to-date real estate information direct from the MLS, and it's free. It does the coolest thing. You take a picture of a house for sale or one that's not even on the market. You'll get the buying history in either case immediately. You'll have the MLS listing. If it's not on the market, you'll have all the previous information about it. Any house, any condo, take a picture through this app. If you are house hunting, this is the free app to have. Same information that the realtors use. And if you go to WGNradio.com/HomeSnap, you can actually see a demo that we made of how it works. I'm the star of the demo. Go to WGNradio.com/HomeSnap. We'll show you how to work it.
Is that the one where you drive without your hands?
Affirmative. Then download it at GetHomeSnap.app. Maybe that's how I... Remember when I hit the tree doing that? Maybe that's when my retina went bye-bye.
No, you damaged the tree.
And its retina snapped. So thanks again to all of the texts and calls. I'll kind of keep you posted on how it's going, just because I think this is a shared experience for a lot of you and maybe a cautionary tale. But if suddenly you see a whole bunch of floaters or bright flash of light like a streak of lightning and then a little encroachment in your vision field, don't wait around on that. Go get that sucker fixed. I had an interesting series of text exchanges because I didn't have much else to do and Brenda didn't want me to be reading much, but I was looking at my phone. And Thomas Jefferson was sending me his analysis of the NBA Finals, which is really funny/weird. We'll say hi to TJ after the news. We'll also talk a little bit about what Steve is maybe about to report on. Steve, are you going to be doing the story again about the bishop in Springfield saying that the Speaker of the House of Illinois?
Yes, I am.
I think that's the... We'll get to that. Oh, and also the R. Kelly story. I've been reading Jim DeRogatis' book, The Music Critic at the Chicago Sun-Times. I'm about halfway through it. It's about R. Kelly. The book is called Soulless. R. Kelly was not on my music radar. I don't listen to his music that much. I know he's a big deal, but I'm not a fan or even very knowledgeable about him. But I thought I'd read through the book. It is fascinating. It's the story of a reporter tracking down a story, and it's the story of R. Kelly and what he's alleged to have done and did. and a few highlights from that after the news as well.
Thinking big thoughts, so you don't have to.
Steve?
Here's John Williams.
Is that you? Hi, it's John. We're in the Allstate Skyline Studio till 3, and Saturdays 10 to noon. Yeah, I still work here.
Lord have mercy.
Thanks to all of your warm wishes and kind thoughts, and thanks to the folks that filled in for me while I was gone recovering from a little surgery, but back to normal now, and it's good to be back. John, my dad had a detached retina by coughing too hard. I thought of Sammy Sosa when he sneezed and threw out his back. And now whenever I sneeze, I try to regulate my mouth, my breath, my nose, my eyes, any orifice that I've got, so as to minimize the pressure on my skull when I sneeze. John, a couple of years ago, I had a hernia surgery. 6 days in the hospital, I didn't pay a penny. And I was just talking about how fortunate we are to have the sort of medical care we do have in this country. And that we always talk about how expensive and inefficient it is and how we don't know how to do health insurance in America. And all those things may be true, but by golly, I'm standing here today telling you that a lot of things with our healthcare community work really well in this country. John, a couple of years ago, hernia surgery, 6 days in the hospital, I didn't pay a penny. Also, the Joint Relief Institute, went there several times, never paid a penny there either. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I hope that worked out well for you. John, I had open-heart surgery at Northwestern in January, and that only cost $50,000. My insurance cost 90% of it, but I thought, given what they did, it was incredibly cheap, says Mark. Thanks for the email, Mark. By the way, Steve, speaking of people trying to cure what ails them, so here's the guy who's taking chocolate infused with the part of the
THC
from marijuana, but he's illegally importing it across state lines into Illinois to help handle his cancer pain.
It's a phenomenal story. He says he has four-stage cancer, and he was ordering from a California dispensary, a place where you can go legally buy marijuana, and having it shipped to his house.
Can't blame the guy for that. I'll bet he's not the only one doing that. Somehow he got caught, huh?
Well, he did get caught, and he was sentenced to 2 years in prison today.
God, I'm sorry. You want me to be king. When I get to be king, that guy's coming out with an apology.
You know what?
Elle, if you talk to his attorney today?
I talked to his attorney's secretary today.
What did you find out?
Nothing. I'm just waiting to hear back from them about putting him on our show.
His attorney.
I misspoke. He got 4 years in prison.
No.
That's twice as much as
How is the society better off having this guy in jail with stage four cancer and pain?
Well, he's going to go back. He's going to be back in court this week to talk about recent health tests, I think. And the judge was to decide then when to send him to prison.
God.
So I don't know if there's a chance there to suspend it. The tragic thing here is that it's going to be legal in 6 months. What he's doing is going to be and not only illegal, but encouraged by the
You're
Illinois
talking about recreational.
Government. Buying marijuana for any reason, as long as you're 21.
But he would have been taking it for medicinal purposes. You'd think he wouldn't have even had to break the law anymore.
Yeah, I don't know if his case didn't qualify under Illinois law.
Yeah.
I don't know if he shortcutted it. Maybe he did it that way. I don't know the answer to that.
Boy, I would have asked for a jury trial. I can't imagine the 12 people would have said, well, now you need to go to jail.
Well, he pleaded guilty. He didn't even go to a trial.
Wow.
And his defense attorneys actually credited the prosecutors for dropping some of the more serious charges against him. No, they did. They said it showed some compassion.
Wow. Really? Well, then there must be some to this story that you and I haven't read yet, because if the guy's illegally importing THC chocolate bars into Illinois. Was he importing?
He was getting it in the mail.
Okay.
Right?
Well, yeah, the importing means to me cross state lines.
I guess so. Yeah.
I guess that ratchets the criminality of it up. But unless he's dealing or doing something else that I don't know about, really, people, you want to spend $30,000 a year to put that guy in jail? That's a good use of our money and his time.
Again, and it's going to be legal in 6 months. It's a really unusual story. I mean, I was hearing the talk up to it all day, and the sentence was anywhere, I think, from 30 years to probation. And I just thought, well, I'm sure this guy's going to get probation. I mean, the state just made this legal, what he did, kind of.
Yeah. I mean, forget the medicinal part. If he just wanted to get stoned for a week, he could.
Yeah, in 6 months.
I've been watching the, so we have a call into him and his attorney. We'd hope that they would be able to join us today. And this was, what town were they in? Was it Central Illinois, Steve, that I saw?
He's from Montgomery, I think. The story is out of King County, but you know where Montgomery is, right?
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Well, that's more north central Illinois.
Well, it's straight west of here, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, which would be north central Illinois.
Okay.
So I've been watching the Warriors play the Toronto team.
Oh, how are my boys? It was a tough one last night.
Did you know that Toronto even had a basketball team?
I know.
But they do. They're in the NBA, and they've got some good players and everything, including that Kawhi Leonard, who a lot of us knew from San Antonio days. But because Klay Thompson was out with an injury, he didn't look that injured to me. And Kevin Durant's not playing because of an injury. It was all up to tiny little Steph Curry, and he couldn't get it done. So, spoiler alert, Golden State's down, 2-1 now?
2-1. They've each won a game in the other one's house.
Yeah.
So
I was watching that game, and it just didn't look like Golden State. And I said to Daisy, the dizzy dappled dachshund that was sitting there on the sofa, and Griffin and Brenda, we were watching it, and I said, this doesn't look like Golden State's night. And they said, well, that's what Golden State does to everybody.
Right.
It never looks like their night. And then Steph and whoever decide, we'll score 40 now. And they come ahead in the third quarter, and they win. I said, they're going to lose by 15. They lost by 14. So I'm feeling pretty good about that.
Well, I'm glad you are feeling good about that. But I'd like to see Golden State win.
Yeah, I don't have a dog in this hunt, as they say. I like watching the best teams play the best they can play. And you're not getting that for Golden State. This team of no-names from Toronto, the Raptors, they are playing well. I mean, did you know who... I'm just looking at some of the names of the guys on that team.
Kelly Trepuka?
Yes. Former Notre Dame star,
right,
is still playing in Toronto. So I got a text message from Thomas Jefferson, which is really weird.
Oh, that's so nice.
I mean, you would not think him to be like an NBA guy. But literally, I said, Elif, I'm going to read you this. Write it down. Thomas Jefferson texted me, I am for the Warriors. But it gets a little wearying. I like this intense and quiet Kawhi Leonard. And I like the politics of team sports more than the sports themselves. This year, Curry reasserts himself as the owner of the Warriors. And probably this helps to drive Durant to another team because he has to feel that they can win without him. Then he is not fully appreciated. It's like Achilles sulking in his tent. The Greeks lose until he returns. Only Thomas Jefferson would watch an NBA game and mention Achilles.
Did he sign it, Thomas Jefferson?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, good, because otherwise I'd be saying, like, hey, just take the wig off. Watch the game.
Later, he texted, I like the grace of professional basketball. I find baseball, he wrote, too slow moving. And football. Go ahead, Steve.
I just wonder if he's getting chocolate in the mail.
He does sound a little enabled here. I find baseball too slow moving, Thomas Jefferson wrote to me two nights ago. And football, though I occasionally watch, it just seems like the Roman Colosseum. But to see that look in Curry's eyes when he launches from an impossible distance, or to see a relationship like that of Jordan and Pippen when they were at their height, it's amazing. I don't like bruisers. I like grace. And D. Green in this year's postseason has just been an inspiration to watch. And finally, Thomas Jefferson texted to me last night, Homer talks about when a hero makes a run. It's called an aristeia. Curry had that last night, like Achilles. But where were Ajax and Agamemnon? I don't know who these Greek people are he's referring to. That such a small man can be that amazing is really unusual, wrote Thomas Jefferson to me. See if we can find Thomas Jefferson. Mr. Jefferson, are you there?
Yes, my dear citizen, I hear you.
Thank you for sharing those thoughts of yours. I cannot believe you're talking up the NBA to me via text this week.
Well, first of all, let me say that anything we can do to invade or punish Canada is good for this country. You know, we invaded Canada twice during my lifetime, during the Revolution and then during the War of 1812. So I'm for any team that can humiliate and maybe annex Canada.
That's not part of the trophy. They don't then cede Canada. You just get a trophy and a paycheck, sir.
You know, these games that involve violence and a ball struck me as absurd. But in your time, these are major economic engines, as I understand it, that this is some of the most compelling activity that occurs in your republic.
It really is. You know, I was overseas not that long ago, and whenever I travel abroad, I always look at the castles and the cathedrals and see what humanity has wrought over the centuries. And I think our castles and cathedrals today are our football stadiums and professional sports arenas. It really is a focus of our society, the likes of which you probably could not begin to appreciate.
Well, sad though it is, as a reflection on your national sense of purpose and the sense of culture and dignity, it's still, you know, how Americans freely choose to entertain themselves. And it's not for me, coming from 200 and plus years ago, to decry the things that delight you. And to see this sort of grace, this is not a brute sport. This is one that involves skills that I'm guessing you don't have. I certainly didn't have. And I think that's remarkable. You know, we watched horse racing in my time, and when people gambled on it, and actually ruined many planters and squires of Virginia because they would gamble away their whole fortune. I didn't gamble. I never did. But I did go to horse races when I was in Williamsburg as a young man, and I justified it by saying this probably breeds up the horses. This is a way of making them stronger, yes, more graceful, etc. Yes. So that it can be justified as a sort of an experiment in genetics.
I'm just thinking, if you just did a starting five from our founding fathers, how tall were you?
Well, I would be fine. I was 6'2.5". Washington was taller.
He was 6'4".
So this Curry, that's really more like Madison. Madison was 5'4", but he was always the smartest person in every room. And he certainly would have mastered this game. I probably always would have been awkward, you know, like the old days when Kareem Abdul-Jabbar would get the ball and then pretend to dribble it down the court, and halfway down it would be stolen by some much smaller person.
Yeah.
That would be me. I'd be clumsy.
I don't know. So we've got you at 6'2.5", Washington at 6'4", Madison, the 5'4" portly point guard. And then we just need I think we've got our five and our four. We just need a shooting guard and a swing man. I need two more players from the starting five.
Patrick Henry would be great. He'd be mouthy. He'd get technical fouls every day.
He'd be the green.
He'd say, give me the ball or give me death, you know, that sort of thing.
Right.
So he would always be on, you know, probation and ripe for suspension. And then if you think Benedict Arnold, halfway through the game, he'd go put on a jersey from the other team. And help them win, you know?
I've got Benjamin Franklin on the bench as the coach, or maybe the owner. I'm not sure where Ben Franklin figures into all of this.
Well, wherever there's profit, Franklin would be there. He would be a great business manager of the thing, and he would be the spokesman. He would be the national spokesman for the sport. And he would tell, you know, during those mandatory things where they interview the coach between quarters, he would have a wry little story about something that happened to him in France, you know, to divert attention when we were losing.
Well, I say this, and tell me if you would say this also, that when it's not the White Sox or the Cubs or the Blackhawks, you know, we have our teams here in Chicago. They're not in the playoffs now. I truly try to champion the best players playing their very best. I want to see the best orchestras play the best music and the best actors act as at the height of their game. So I feel that same way about the Golden State Warriors. I want them to play as well and as fluidly, I think you use the word gracefully, as possible. Would you agree with that sort of sentiment?
Yes, and let me go back to what I was saying in my text, that in Homer's Iliad, these heroes, there are many of them, Diomedes and Agamemnon and Menelaus and Hector and so on. Each one has this moment where he becomes the greatest person on the battlefield. That's called an aristeia. Achilles has one. Hector has one. But you saw in this game last night, this Curry, this small guy with incredible skills, made this run, 47 points, I think it's the second most points ever scored in a playoff game. You know, if he had scored 10 more, they might have won the game. But meanwhile, somebody else, like in this case Durant, is either sulking in his tent or he's injured, and you don't have that support team of Diomedes and others that are required to help you win the war. The hero emerges as an extraordinary national figure, Achilles. But if you lose the war, it doesn't do you any good, does it?
And this is the only radio show in America to offer that kind of analysis of the NBA playoffs. So, you know, you've got your other sports stations up and down the dial, but they're not doing it like Thomas Jefferson does. All right, Mr. Jefferson, I'm going to let you go, but maybe we'll check in with you again first part of next week after another game or two, and we'll see what your take on the playoffs is.
If I had lived in your time, I would have been Dennis Miller. You know, I would have been that brainy commentator on the side who talks about the Aeneid and Dante and the Iliad and the founding fathers, and I don't know that it would have entertained anybody, but I would be glad to speak again.
You may remember that when Dennis Miller was, we may have forgotten, the color guy for Monday Night Football, then, or was it Sunday Night Football? I think it was Monday Night.
It was
Football.
Monday Night.
On Tuesday, there would always be a blog posted, and websites would cover it as well, interpreting Dennis Miller. And so you not only had his color commentary of the game, but then you sort of the next day digested what he said and you learned a little. I don't think he was a good choice for that job, but that was kind of there was an upside. It was a twofold experience.
Well, before we speak again, I would urge you and all of your listeners to read Homer's Iliad, preferably in the original Greek, and then we'll be able to have a more meaningful conversation.
Mr. President, Americans won't read the Mueller report. Why would they read the Iliad?
One can always dream of living in an ideal agrarian republic.
Goodbye, Mr. Jefferson. We'll talk again.
Bye, friend.
Thomas Jefferson was the third president of the United States. Hey, John, one of the reasons Steph Curry is struggling is because of Rockford's own Fred VanVleet is shutting him down. Rockford has become Toronto fans. Go Fred. And from 224, could Thomas Jefferson be a bigger geek? Baseball is by far the more interesting sport. Maybe it's a more interesting sport, but it's not a more graceful sport. He loved the grace of it. I'll say this, too, having just watched the NBA playoffs a little bit, like maybe you have been, no sport is more difficult to officiate. No sport tolerates more bad calls. And this includes the NFL playoffs. No sport has to tolerate more missed and just flat-out wrong bad calls than the NBA. And you just get so frustrated, and then you just throw up your hands and say, but it goes both ways. And so at the end of the day, were some of those missed calls the reason that Golden State lost last night? No. Get real in the morning with Larry Potash and Robin Baumgarten, Paul Conrad, and the entire WGN-TV Morning News team. That's weekdays from 4 to 10. Now, you've helped finance your kids' college education, right? Now the monthly payment's coming, and it's just going to crush you. And it doesn't have to be that way. You may not know the law or rules to qualify for lower payments, but Kaplan Law Firm does. Kaplan Law Firm knows the secret of getting rid of student loan debt. This is just a simple fact. You don't know it. It's all they do, and doggone it, they're good at it. Call this number, 312-294-8989, or visit financialrelief.com. If you have student loan debt and you haven't called this, I cannot. Do I have to get in my car, drive to your house, and walk you over there? It's this simple. Call 312-294-8989 or visit financialrelief.com. John, medicinal or not, this is a text about Steve Bertrand's story about the Illinois man who's going to go to jail because he was bringing across state lines. And maybe that's not the only reason, but that's one of the factors. THC-laced chocolate to handle his cancer pain. Medicinal or not, John, legal in 6 months or not, it was sent through the mail, and that is a felony.
Yeah, and you know, this, I hope you can talk to someone because I'm sorry to be such a terrible conduit of the information, but I mean, even his attorney is quoted by the Daily Herald as saying he was relieved to have it over. He wishes he could have done probation so he could maintain his course of treatment. But the story also referred to the defense attorney as referring to the judge as compassion.
Yeah.
You know, he said, but, you know, 40 pounds of marijuana is a lot of pounds of marijuana.
Well, if he was dealing it, then I have a problem. I have a tiny problem. I still don't have a big problem, but I mean, really. So you're sitting there with a robe. You're being just, and you're going to put a guy in jail for 2 years or 4 years because he was self-medicating with THC-laced chocolate? I mean, on what planet is that a good use of that man's time or our money? Thank you, Steve Bertrand. This is the contentious John Williams. I was supposed to be in the hospital, but they said, go away.
Does Brenda say about you triangulating the temperatures in your home?
She thinks it's pretty interesting. She thinks I'm pretty accurate. She supports it conceptually.
She's rolling her eyes right now. I know she is. I know she is.
I can see her being like, oh, John.
You know, Brenda, the bathroom's on the south side of the house. It's getting more direct sun exposure. And then I kind of figure out what the temperature is going to be. What a fun game to play when you don't have much else to do. So we'll reach out again to the man and his attorney who is evidently going to go to jail, maybe going to go to jail.
Yeah, and so I want to read you more quotes because the attorney, and again, they're back in court, I said earlier, next week, but it's next week,
Refresh our listeners with what we're talking about.
So this 37-year-old man who has cancer, according to the wire, or the reporting, he has stage 4 cancer. It's spread to different parts of his body. And he was getting from the mail from a legal dispensary in California over 40 pounds of THC laced chocolates, and so he was charged with that. He was also charged, I think, with distribution or something like that, and the prosecutors dropped those charges. So essentially, he was charged with possession. The defense attorney praised prosecutors for dropping some of the charges, calling them compassionate. And what I had heard earlier, we're getting conflicting reporting here. Some said the minimum sentence was 4 years, but other reporting I've heard today and read today says that he could have been sentenced to probation. So his attorney is David Cambrick. He said the judge has been, quote-unquote, very kind when sentencing Franzen. He said we'd hope to convince the prosecution to give him probation. The judge was cognizant of his health and wanted to give him some sort of break, but 40 pounds of cannabis is a lot. That's the defense attorney.
Yeah. Okay. Well, then why am I championing this guy's cause? Some of you need more information in order to take my view. I need more information to be dissuaded from my view. My view is I don't think that's a good use of that man's time or our money. It's expensive to put somebody in jail, and I'm not exactly sure how serious his crime is, that we've got to get this guy off the street for 4 years. He'll be dead maybe by the time his term is expired.
One person actually called in and said, when we have people shooting each other on the streets, why are we putting this man who's suffering in jail?
763 texted, about the man going to jail for the use of marijuana, they let Jesse Smollett walk? We'll always have that one. Whenever somebody gets away with some crime or their sentence is harsh, you can always, Illinoisans will always have that. Chicagoans will. And we let Smollett walk?
Don't they also have compassionate release in prisons? Why put someone in if you would probably take them out for compassionate release having stage 4 cancer?
Yeah, yeah. Don't have an answer to that. I wouldn't have put him in to begin with. Come on, John. 40 pounds of pot, says 847, just for personal use? I got to believe there's more involved than we're hearing about. I'm sure there is. We're working on it. But the next texter says 40 pounds laced chocolate isn't 40 pounds of THC.
Right.
It's 40 pounds of chocolate. A little bit of THC.
He was charged with having over 5,000 grams of THC or marijuana.
Well, that sounds like a lot.
Right, but if I really think we don't know the full story here, but if I'm ordering it, I'm not going to keep ordering it. I'm going to go for a big order. I'm serious, right? Why would you be getting a weekly shipment if it's risky to get it through the mail anyway?
Yeah.
It's just... To me, the timing of it is...
I just don't understand these strict adherence to laws. I'm a situational ethicist, and I remember the story in Minneapolis when I was doing radio up there. A mother had a son who had epileptic-like fits and a whole host of medical and psychological issues. He had a neurological condition. They really didn't diagnose him exactly. And they tried everything to calm and quiet this child, but he would erupt in school. They finally had to take him out of class. And one day the mom tried some THC oil, and she found out that it worked. And she started giving it to her son, and he was back in school, and he was doing well. And one of the parents said to the mother, boy, little Jimmy is sure doing well in school. What's going on? And she said, THC oil. We give it to him and he's better now. That parent told the school and the school kicked the kid out and the county prosecutor prosecuted the family.
Wow.
You know, and it's like, I'm sorry. My hearing isn't so good sometimes. Maybe I didn't hear that. I can't imagine thinking that that is and the right course. You know, if you were the, and I know if you're, it's complicated for teachers because they're mandatory reporters and maybe they have different standards, but even then.
So just to show you how complicated this is going to be once marijuana becomes legal, you know, all the things that have to be figured out. This case that we're talking about actually, according to the Kane County Chronicle, began 5 years ago. So it's been going on for quite a long time. It's hard for me to understand. Said he received the package containing the candy more than 5 years ago.
He's going to be in jail while everybody else is recreationally doing worse.
But what about the people who are, you know, in the court system now waiting for their trial to come up?
Well, what's
it comes up after marijuana is legal, but they were charged when it was illegal.
Well, isn't Kim Fox trying to get that expunged?
If you're convicted, yeah. But I'm just saying, what if you get arrested today with marijuana? Of course, I guess if it's a small amount, it's just a ticket anyway.
If you're another 40-pounder, it sounds like you're going to jail. And you will be in jail for bad timing, if nothing else.
Yeah. 5,000 grams is quite a bit, I think.
Yeah, okay. I'll vacillate if I find out he was running a shop out of his basement.
So you're standing strong now, but yeah, willing to change your mind.
Well, I think that's the joy of me, Steve.
especially in a story like this one.
Well, just one other strange story, just while we're going down this road. Catholic bishop in Springfield, no communion for Madigan or Cullerton because they support the abominable Illinois abortion rights bill. I understand if you're a person of faith and if you're a faith leader, how you need to take a strong position vis-a-vis your religion on a social issue like abortion. I mean, I'm not surprised that they think this is abominable. But then they're going to publicly shame two state lawmakers by withholding the sacrament of Holy Communion from them because they don't agree with their policy.
Right.
As though these guys are priests. They are social agents. They have their own conscience. They reflect the will of the people. This is what Illinois wants to do.
Well, apparently, though, they're practicing Catholics, and you're not supposed to do that. Now, I don't know who this bishop actually gives communion to, because, you know, if you're a sinner, you're supposed to have confessed. I don't know what the people go to confession anymore, so
well,
maybe that's why no one's sitting in his church these days.
Yeah. This is from the Chicago Tribune. Listen to this paragraph. When asked if Chicago Cardinal Blaise Supich, thank you. Sorry, Pete McMurray. When asked if Chicago Cardinal Blaise Supich has ever imposed similar sanctions on lawmakers who supported abortion rights legislation, the Archdiocese of Chicago released a statement. Quote, Cardinal Supich has had a longstanding position over his 20 years as a bishop that is important to place the emphasis on teaching what the church believes about important issues of the day, all while maintaining an unshakable confidence that the Eucharist is an opportunity of grace and conversion to bring people to the truth. That is, I don't go to the church anymore, but I was raised a Catholic. And if you ask for forgiveness, your sins are forgiven. You may take the Eucharist. It is the body of Christ. You don't use that as a lever to try and exact change on somebody. At least that's not the Catholic Church I grew up with.
Yeah, I don't know if it's the same bishop as it has been for many years, but this has come out of the Springfield diocese before, things like this.
Yeah.
I think the headline of the story really is what the speaker said. He goes, yeah, they threatened me, and I decided it was worth it anyway. Or as I decided, you know, I wasn't going to bother. I thought about it. I thought it was more important to vote for women's health, rape victims, incest victims. You know, I think that's pretty... I think that says something to the bishop, you know. Yeah, you threatened me, and you were wrong.
Dick Durbin can't take communion either. Our U.S. senator, same reason.
There, in that...
In Springfield.
Yeah.
So, I don't know how that's working out for them, if they feel that's the best use of the weaponizing the Holy Eucharist, but you know, and I mean that, what I said, that sounds very charged, doesn't it, weaponizing the Eucharist. At the same time, it is completely within the sort of theological belief system of the church.
Right. This bishop thinks, believes, yes, and his church believes strongly that this is wrong.
So I would do that in private, though. Like, I would deny him it if he walked down my aisle. But really, is it your job to also cite individuals and say that's a bad person, he can't have the Eucharist?
Or I like what Supich says, because he's clearly going to not weaponize it.
Yeah.
My point is, if you're going to apply that standard and be, you know, righteous about it, and it's certainly your role to do that, or could be your role to do that, let's do it to everyone, and it'll be a much shorter mass. I mean, really, if you're going to not give communion to everyone who's violated something, an ordinance of the Catholic Church, that's fine. We can just cut that part out.
The funny thing is, Catholics have known for years that if your priest, say, was against birth control, you could find another priest who would allow. You know, I mean, I hate to say shop around, but not all priests practice their religion the same way. Some parishes are more liberal than others. You know, it's kind of fluid that way. Maybe not on, is abortion against
the
church?
Well, no, it is. It clearly is, John. You just gave two examples. Supich's view, or
yeah, I guess I did.
View is completely different than the bishop's.
Springfield, yeah. It is 2:51, so there's that on WGN. I told you I wanted to talk a little bit about Jim DeRogatis' book, Soulless, about Marvin Gaye. I'm about halfway through it. Marvin Gaye, about R. Kelly. He mentions a lot of, it's a great book, and I'll just get to it more tomorrow. But it's a great history of Chicago. It's a great tour through music. And as much as it is a story about R. Kelly, and that's the focus, of course, it's also the story of a reporter and what it's like covering this story. And I'm not an R. Kelly fan. This isn't my beat, but I'm very much enjoying it. And I think if you are a Chicagoan who wants to stay in touch with the Chicago scene, Soulless by DeRogatis is time well spent. We're out of time. It's 2:56. Lots of calls on this. We'll go back tomorrow to the conversation about the bishop and some of our state lawmakers, and we'll cover more of the R. Kelly story as well. Plus, we're reaching out to the attorney and that man in Montgomery, Illinois, who may well go to jail for a few years because he was medicating himself with THC-laced chocolate. That's all coming up tomorrow. Rokan, Anna DeVlantis, I was thinking about you the other day, Rokan.
What were you thinking? I've been thinking about you a lot, John Wayne.
I was thinking, I'm glad Ro is not here, because there'd be too much hysteria.
Too much to take in.
Gnashing of teeth,
yes,
and wailing.
Yeah, I had sympathy blindness just for you during this whole thing.
Sympathy blindness?
Sympathy blindness, wow. Yeah, I had that.
Glad you're back, John.
Thank you, it's good to
yes.
be here. I miss y'all.
I mean, I know, I heard you talking about it. I know a number of people have had this. And sounds like you're very fortunate in terms of how it worked out. So that's great.
Absolutely. I can see well. And, you know, God be willing, it's going to stick and I'll be just fine.
Yes. Very, very good.
When you go to church, pray for Mike Madigan and John Colleton, okay? Keep them in your prayers.
Wait, do I have to do that?
Because they can't go.
Wait, yes.
So my orders are, do I pray for my eyeball first?
Yes. You can do it in that order. That's okay.
I'm going to pray for your eyeball first, too. Your eyeball is going to get precedence over any politician ever now known or conceived.
Right.
In the future.
Madigan walks down the aisle. I thought they quit giving him the Eucharist a long time ago just because they're just tired of you people.
Yeah. This is like a whole, it's the abortion thing, right?
Yeah,
it's
absolutely. Yeah. And I'm just, we'll talk more about that tomorrow. I'm going to rest.
You should do that. Right. Get on your side or your back or something. I don't know. Whatever you have to do. All right. Thank you, John.